Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sitaram Lakshman. Thanks. All right. So today we're continuing on with Brahma Samhita, and we'll begin by just briefly reviewing the four verses, 32 to 35, which we went through yesterday, but we went through perhaps a little quickly. The idea presented by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in the purport of text 32 is that some people, when they hear about Krishna and his pastimes, they may become skeptical and think that this is some sort of imagination. So therefore, in order to deal with those doubts, Lord Brahma speaks verses 32, 33, 34, and 35, in which he presents certain information about how Krishna is and how Krishna works. And if a person is able to appreciate how Krishna is and how he works in these different ways, then one may be able to appreciate or accept that the pastimes could be like that, that Krishna could be like that. So the information then that Lord Brahma presents us, the first part in verse 32, and it's very important because it's also going to come up in verses 36, 37, and 38, which we'll mainly be focusing on today. Lord Brahma in verse 32 says that Krishna is Ananda Chinmaya Sad Ujvala Vigrahasya. So he has that wonderful body, which is Ananda Chinmaya Sad, blissful, fully conscious and eternal, substantial. And so that is sort of like the fundamental concept. He is Ananda Chinmaya Sad. Eternal, fully conscious, and fully blissful. And this is displayed, and he functions in these terms and enjoys his bliss and his eternality and his full consciousness in different ways. For example, in verse 32, the idea of these interchangeable limbs, interchangeable organs is there. So he experiences Ananda Chinmaya Sad in his vigraha, in his form, through these interchangeable organs and bodily parts. Then in verse 33, he enjoys his Ananda Chinmaya Sad, his blissful eternal pastimes. Because by dint of that, he is one without a second, he's not subject to decay, beginningless, endless, the beginning, the eternal Purusha means the eternal source of everything, but still he's a person, Navayovanam cha, a person possessing the beauty of blooming youth. And in verse 34, all these extraordinary characteristics, they're so amazing. This Ananda Chinmaya Sad, or Sat, is so amazing that the yogis and gyanis cannot appreciate practically even the smallest part of it. The tip of his toe they may approach, but then the tridents get them. So they don't even really get the mercy of the tip of the toe. And on top of all that, he is in text 35, he's an undifferentiated entity, as there's no distinction between the potency and the possessor of the potency. On the basis of achintya bheda bheda tattva, he is one with his creation while being independent of it and thereby the enjoyer of it. And not only that, but it's like part of that actually. It's an example of that really. All the universes are in him, but andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. He is present within every atom of every universe. So this is full-fledged achintya bheda bheda tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference. So on the basis of all these different facts about Krishna, then our skeptic should be prepared to appreciate that if, in his pastimes, he does some very extraordinary things, then that's okay. You know, we're prepared to accept that and relish and enjoy that and not be skeptical about it. And if his form is described as being so beautiful and eternal, and his abode is described as being a place where there's millions of purpose trees and Lakshmi Sahasra, so many goddesses of fortune are worshipping him, then we shouldn't be skeptical, because on the basis of what has been explained about him in these four verses. However, it is not just a matter of that only. That is the sort of statistical information, or hard information, you could say, the facts and figures. But actually, Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhakto. Along with having this knowledge of the remarkable nature of Krishna, you have to be a devotee. And then it can all fall into place, everything can fit into place, and then you can appreciate, like we gave the example yesterday, famous story, Narada Muni with the Brahman and the cobbler, how that cobbler was able to understand something which makes no sense on the material platform, really. But because he was a devotee, even though he was not educated, but he was able to grasp this and then illustrate the point with the example of the banyan seed pod, which contains so many seeds, each of which is potentially at least a vast banyan tree. Prabhupada talked about one banyan tree, or at least, actually I can't remember who talked about it, but I heard about one banyan tree which went from about like 20 kilometers or so outside Calcutta into Calcutta, but it was one tree. Yeah, anyway, the basic point there is that the devotee, like that cobbler, is given the actual intelligence to understand things which are inconceivable. And not necessarily, we mentioned yesterday, not necessarily just in that sense of blind faith, but Krishna actually gives the intelligence to grasp it, how it's like that. Yes, so this information about how Krishna is and how he's working and how he's able to work has to be there, but then on top of it there has to be Atma Bhakto. There has to be bhakti. And that is really the, you could say, the missing link in the whole equation. Once that is there, then everything can fall into place. even for a child or someone like the cobbler. But if that missing link is not there, then even if you're Albert Einstein or someone of that sort, Mr. Hawkins, you won't be able to understand. You won't be able to understand. So that's something then, just recapping a little about verses 32 to 35. Now we'll go on to the next section, which is, or like subsection, verses 36, 37, and 38. Having heard in 32 to 35 how bhakti is the essential ingredient which makes everything become real and make sense. Now in these verses 36, 37, and 38, Lord Brahma is going to glorify bhakti and explain more about bhakti, basically. Particularly in text 37, which has the 12-page purport. So he really gets into it there in a very big way. Let us then recite responsively text 36. All right, are we ready? Text 36. Yad bhava bhavata diyo manujasta taiva. Samprapya rupa mahima sanayana pusha. Suktaryam eva nigama pratitai stuvanti. Govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. I adore the same Govinda, the primeval Lord, in whose praise men who are imbued with devotion sing the mantra suktas told by the Vedas by gaining their appropriate beauty, greatness, thrones, conveyances, and ornaments. So, this verse is introducing the subject of bhakti by explaining how through performing devotional service, people who are imbued with devotion, with bhakti, even actually with bhava, in fact, the verse says, yad bhava bhavita diyo manujas. Those people whose hearts are imbued with bhava. So the very advanced devotees who are on the level of perfection, or at least the beginnings of perfection, what happens with them? Then they attain their appropriate beauty, greatness, thrones, conveyances, and ornaments, or, in other words, it's pointed out, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta explains, in the second paragraph of the purport, the devotees, surcharged with the ideas of their respective service, serve Krishna eternally and ultimately reach the goal of their respective ideals. They attain the real nature of their self, befitting their respective rasas. So in other words, these very great devotees, or devotees generally, as they advance in Krishna consciousness and they come to the level of bhava, then they attain their eternal rasas. And there are five rasas, as he mentions, Shantadasya, Sakyavatsalya, and Sringara. Each one of them has its appropriate facilities and features. The appropriate appearance, bodily form, then appropriate clothing and ornaments, and dwelling place, house, or it may be a palace or whatever, like this. So the devotees, as they become perfect, they attain these things in terms of what are their specific relationships. So they'll vary then in terms of the specific relationship. And even within the five specific relationships, there are certain details which are unique to each individual. So that is basically the meaning of text 36. Then, having introduced the subject of bhakti, or the glorious nature of bhakti, so glorious that, as we heard before, it's the secret key to allow you to begin to understand Krishna properly, if you're in material consciousness. But then if you get some bhakti, then you can begin to understand Krishna. So it's the key also to achieving the perfection of life. So then, in text 37, Lord Brahma goes on to explain about the highest manifestation of that bhakti. All these different people who attain perfection, they attain their specific situations with their specific paraphernalias and so on. So what to speak of the gopis, and what to speak of Srimati Radharani, who is the topmost of the gopis? So I'll read the translation of text 37. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, residing in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha, resembling his own spiritual figure, the embodiment of the ecstatic potency, possessed of the 64 artistic activities. In the company of her confidants, Sakhis, who are embodiments of the extensions of her bodily form, permeated and vitalized by his ever-blissful spiritual rasa. So the gopis are the topmost devotees, and of the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the topmost. So here, she is described, along with her closest associates, who are, Lord Brahma says, embodiments of the extensions of her bodily form. In other words, they are expansions of her, different aspects of her. We'll talk about that shortly. First thing I'll mention is that you may notice that in the Sanskrit for text 37, it begins by saying, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. Again, Ananda Chinmaya. But this time, instead of Ananda Chinmaya Sad Ujvala Vigraha, the eternal, conscious, and blissful body of Krishna. But now this is the eternal, conscious, and blissful rasa of Krishna. All those things, those understandings given in verses 32 to 35, which are Ananda Chinmaya Sad, related to Krishna's form like that, yes, they all contribute ultimately to the rasa, which manifests in its topmost form in Srimati Radharani, and then immediate next are her immediate associates, the Sakhis. So, this is very interesting subject matter. This is very deep subject matter. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta gives a very deep and very lengthy purport, 12 pages. So we'll try and discuss at least the main points from the purport today, and we'll just see how we go. First of all, on page 62, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta introduces, he introduces this concept of Radharani being the embodiment of the Hladini Shakti, the ecstatic potency, which is possessed of the 64 artistic activities. So the 64 are listed page 62, 63 and the first half of page 64. They're all listed out there. These are part and parcel of the ecstatic potency, the Hladini Shakti. When Srimati Radharani exhibits these different things, Krishna enjoys. Radharani is the embodiment of Krishna's ecstatic potency, his pleasure potency. She is his manifest capacity for enjoyment. And how does that manifest in such ways that he gets his enjoyment in these 64 ways? The principle, though, is explained in the first paragraph on page 62. I must say it is a little complicated. I don't know if you're familiar with these terms like vibhava, alambana, udipan. But we'll try and explain them a little bit. Vibhava is the governing term. It means that which causes ecstatic love to arise. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta points out that there are two parts to that. There is the alambana and the udipan. The alambana, there are two parts to the alambana. We don't want to confuse anyone. I mean, there's a little bit of detail here. Alambana, he says, means prop. If we understand the two parts of alambana, then perhaps we can understand a little bit more what prop means. So the two parts of alambana are the ashraya and the vishaya. The ashraya means that person who loves Krishna. The shelter of the love. The person who has the love. And the vishaya means the person who is loved. So generally, the ashraya is the devotee. The devotee loves Krishna. And therefore Krishna is the vishaya, or the loved. Of course, it also can be turned around the other way, in that Krishna loves his devotees. So this is what alambana means, in two parts. Those who love and that person or persons who are loved. Then the udipan means those things which cause the love. Why do the devotees love Krishna? Because he's very lovable. Because he's very merciful. Jiva Goswami says this is the main quality of Krishna in regard to his devotees. He is Bhaktivatsala. He is very merciful to his devotees. There are many other qualities he has, but that is the main one. And when the devotees see how Krishna loves them, then the devotees' love for Krishna is stimulated. Therefore, Krishna's mercy would be considered an udipan, a thing which stimulates the love of the lover for the beloved. You get the idea? Are you with us? Okay. Now, in the case of these 64, Radharani has these 64. So because she displays these 64 fully, completely, therefore Krishna loves her. Therefore Krishna is attracted to her. And when Krishna is attracted to her, then Krishna enjoys. And what does Krishna enjoy? His pleasure potency. Therefore, these 64 are the specific forms which the pleasure potency takes, which when Krishna contacts them, his attraction for Radharani is aroused. And when that happens, then rasa occurs. Rasa means the mellows, the loving mellows. And if you turn over to page 64, the second paragraph, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta makes this point. All these arts, manifesting their own eternal forms, are ever visible in the region of Goloka as the ingredients of rasa. They are the ingredients. When you mix them together, all these incredible qualities of Krishna, of Radharani, and Krishna experiences them, then the mixture of it all produces rasa, the mellow of ecstatic love between Radha and Krishna. So that is a brief explanation of what these 64 are about. And if you look at them, you'll see that they include everything. Radharani knows how to sing, if we go through the list from one. She knows how to play musical instruments, dance, act, paint, decorate her face and body. She knows how to prepare, make, like, it's art, really, from rice and flowers. She knows how to make a bed with flowers. She knows how to cleanse her teeth, her cloth, and paint her body. She knows how to decorate with jewels. She even knows how to play music in water. She knows how to splash with water. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, all these things she can do. Completely expertly. She knows how to make garlands, how to make crowns of different types, including with flowers. She knows how to dress herself in such a way that Krishna becomes bewildered. She knows how to decorate her ears with earrings and various knick-knacks. She knows how to apply aromatics. She knows how to set ornaments. She knows how to juggle. Kochumar, what does that mean? I forget. She knows how to do sleight of hand. She can trick Krishna. She knows how to make salads, would you believe it? Actually, it says shark. Shark means she knows how to make preparations with leafy green vegetables, basically, including, I'm sure, salads, and breads, and cakes, and the most amazing foods. Did I mention earlier on in our seminar about the one incident of Srimati Radharani with Devasa Muni? Did I mention that? Devasa Muni just happened along one day as the gopis were just out in the fields. And he walked up to them and said, you know, I'm extremely hungry. I need to eat now. As in, you know, like right this minute, please. And the gopis said, well, yes, okay. But, you know, we're out in the fields. We'll have to run home. So give us a little while and we'll be right back. He said, no. Now means now. I'm hungry. So Radharani made some little biscuits out of the dust of Vrindavan. Dust and water. Immediately on the spot, within a few seconds, she presented these biscuits to Devasamuni, who said, "What? How do you expect me to eat this?" And the other gopi said, no, try it and see. Whatever she makes is very nice. You must try it. So in the end, Devasamuni forced himself to try one biscuit. And he found, this tastes incredible. He couldn't believe it. So he ate all of them. Yeah, so Radharani. See, when we read through all these, I don't think we'll read through all 64, but when you look through all 64, you should understand she knows how to do these things in the most incredible ways. More than incredible. Yes. So she's very amazing. She can make drinks. She knows how to sew. She can play on the lute and play on the damuru drum. She knows how to make riddles. Even it says down the bottom here, she knows carpentry. She knows the mode of fighting of lambs, cocks and birds. So she knows so many things. And when Krishna experiences these things, then, Krishna becomes overwhelmed. And that is called rasa. These exchanges in which Radharani is manifesting all these expertises. And Krishna, he's also expert. No less expert. So when they're having their exchanges of these expertises, this is called rasa. So that is that. That's an introduction. Then he goes on, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta goes on to discuss a very important subject. The subject here in this verse, of course, is the gopis and Radharani. So that is the topmost. They are the topmost devotees, and their relationships with Krishna are the topmost. However, often they're misunderstood. The other day we were at Yavat, and many people misunderstand that Krishna, he was trying to steal away Radharani from Abhimanyu. Like Mahatma Gandhi, he said that as far as I'm concerned, I think there are two Krishnas. There's my Krishna, who spoke Bhagavad Gita. Then there's this other Krishna who danced with the gopis. So I don't like him. And Gandhi, from what I was told, said that if these two Krishnas are actually one, then I will give up being a Hindu. He said that. Because that Krishna who danced with the gopis, as far as he's concerned, is just too bad. Intolerably bad. So this is a problem, but actually this is the topmost part of Krishna consciousness. So in order to help us get it straight, from like the bottom of page 64, for about the next 10 pages or several pages at least, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta discusses at length why these things are not wrong. Yeah. Why they are actually right, and even not just right, but the topmost, very best features or displays of the absolute truth. So he begins, let us see, where shall we begin? Well, towards the bottom of page 64, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta talks about He's talking about prakat and aprakat. Those pastimes that manifest themselves on the mundane plane, doesn't mean exactly mundane, but in this Gokula, are his visible or prakat pastimes. All those very pastimes exist in their non-visible aprakat forms in Goloka, beyond the ken of mundane knowledge. So, we've already discussed how Goloka and Gokula are not different. That we already discussed. So, he says then, continuing on in the next paragraph, from the conclusions just stated, it is clear that there is no distinction between the visible and non-visible pastimes. As the two places are not different, the pastimes are not different. So then let us read this remark, which he quotes from Jiva Goswami, just a few lines down from there. Jiva Goswami says, the visible pastimes of Krishna, that means his prakat lila here in Gokula, are the creation of his chit, spiritual potency, being in conjunction with the reference to the mundane function, because they're going on here within this material world. They exhibit certain features which seem to be true by the influence of the limiting potency Maya. But these cannot exist in the transcendental reality. In other words, we may think that even though Gokula and Goloka are the same, but the pastimes are different. We discussed this already, that in a sense there's difference. But now he's going to point out how in another sense there's no difference. The destruction of demons, illicit paramourship, birth, etc. We mentioned these. Are examples of this peculiarity. The gopis are the extensions of the ecstatic energy of Krishna, and so are exceptionally his own. How can there be illicit connection in their case? The illicit mistressship of the gopis found in his visible pastimes is but the mundane reflection of the transcendental reality. Now, one thing he doesn't go into in detail here, but if you look through in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll see our commentators have quoted from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quite a bit. He makes the point there are three categories of gopis. The first category is those who are eternally perfect. Then there are those who have become perfect in their previous lifetimes, and now they've entered Krishna's pastimes. In the case of those who are eternally perfect, like Radharani, either they're not married at all in Gokula, or if they are married, but the relationship is a complete illusion. Just like we mentioned in Yavat, Radharani with Abhimanyu. Actually, effectively, there is no relationship. He does not come close enough to her to touch her shadow. So there is no relationship. In some cases, with these eternally perfect gopis, there actually is no relationship. They're never married. In other cases, they are married, but there's effectively no relationship. And similarly, with those who have become perfect. Then there's a third category. And they are those who have come to the level of bhava, but have not come to the level of prema. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that they actually marry, they actually have children by their husbands, in fact, but then they are attracted to Krishna and gradually their eternal relationship manifests more. And then they enter into Krishna's pastimes actively on the conjugal platform. So, in the case of those who are not quite perfect and they get married. Their position is a little different. But in the case of those who are eternal associates or who have actually become perfect from previous lifetimes, then effectively there is no marriage. Effectively there is no marriage. Then, let us see. Let us go on here. So the idea is that there's no difference, even though there is apparent difference. And he then explains on page 66, towards the bottom of page 66, there's no difference even though there's apparent difference. And any apparent difference is really only due to the realization of the beholder. So this is explained at the bottom of page 66 about seven lines up. The underlying principle is this, that though Gokula, Vrindavan here, is as holy and free from dross, meaning basically the influence of matter, as Goloka, still it is manifested on the mundane plane by the influence of the chit potency, Yogamaya. Invisible and non-visible matters in the prakat and aprakat leelas, in the prakat and aprakat regions, there is no impurity, contamination and imperfection inherent in the world of limitation. So there is no contamination actually. Only there is some difference in the matter of realization in proportion to the self-realization of the seekers after the absolute. In other words, one who has become realized fully will see that there is no difference between the places and between the pastimes. So that is one point, how there's no difference between the places, and there's ultimately no difference between the pastimes either, in the different places. Then he goes on to address the subject of just the whole parikya rasa idea, as opposed to swakya. The whole idea of the unmarried loving exchanges between Krishna and the gopis, be it in Gokula or in Goloka. So, the point is that even though the pastimes in Gokula exhibit certain features due to being in the material world, like being married, Krishna taking birth and so on, but they have their basis in Goloka, because there's a very important principle involved. That principle is discussed beginning at the bottom of page 67. This is very important, and this is very interesting. Down towards the bottom of page 67, he says, Rupa Goswami has made certain statements, and in regard to them, Jiva Goswami, after mature deliberation, has established the transcendental paramorship, means the parakya rasa, Krishna in his unmarried loving relationships with the gopis. He has established it as Vibrama Vilas. This is a very important term. Something seemingly different from what it appears to be. For example, his birth and other things like the apparent being married of the gopis, which are all accomplished by Yogamaya. By an explanation, this is actually in Krishna Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami has expressed his profound implication. Joyous pastimes by the medium of seeming error, Vibrama Vilas. So this term, Vibrama Vilas, Brahma, means confusion, bewilderment, mistake, error. And vibrama, vi, is like a particle of emphasis. Very confused. And vilas means pastimes. So vibrama vilas. Vilas means like ecstatic pastimes. Vibrama vilas means joyous pastimes through the medium of seeming error. It appears something is wrong. Krishna is mixing with the gopis particularly. And this appears wrong. But this is vibrama vilas. Ecstatic pastimes on the basis of apparent error. So he goes on to explain, still, this is on page 68, still, since Sripad Jiva Goswami has established the identity of Goloka with Gokula, it must be admitted that there is transcendental reality underlying all the pastimes of Gokula. A husband is one who binds himself in wedlock with a girl, while a paramour, you understand this term paramour, means boyfriend, unmarried. While a paramour is one who, in order to win another's wife's love, by means of love, crosses the conventions of morality, by the impulse of the sentiment that regards her love as the be-all and end-all of existence. Can you follow that? The idea is that regarding the other person's wife's love as being such an incomparable thing which must be obtained and attained, so the paramour crosses the conventions of morality to achieve that. In Goloka, there is no such function at all as that of the nuptial relationship, married relationship. Hence, there is no husbandhood characterized by such connection. On the other hand, since the gopis, who are self-supported real entities, are not tied to anybody else in wedlock, they cannot also have the state of concubinage, or becoming, you know, like a woman who gets into an illicit relationship with a boyfriend. There can also be no separate entities in the form of swakya and parakya states. In the visible pastimes on the mundane plane, the function in the form of the fact that the gopis are, some of them are apparently married, is found. But Krishna is beyond the scope of that function. Hence the said function of the circle of all love is contrived by Yoga Maya. This is Yoga Maya's expert arrangement. If you remember some days ago we mentioned a little bit how Yoga Maya is most incredible what she does. Most amazing what she does. So this is the most amazing part of what she does. Create this environment of apparent marriage in order to increase the ecstasy. Krishna tastes the transcendental rasa akin to paramourship by overstepping that function. By overlooking the marriage of the gopis. This pastime of going beyond the pale of the apparent moral function manifested by Yoga Maya is, however, also observable only on the mundane plane, by the eye that is enwrapped by the mundane covering. But there is really no such levity, or there's no such problem in the pastimes of Krishna. So those people who are in illusion, when they see Krishna's conjugal pastimes in Gokula, they'll think, just see, There he is mixing with married women. But the realized souls will not see that. They'll not see that exactly. So then he continues on page 69 to conclude this discussion, or at least our sort of brief analysis of it. About halfway down page 69, by the sentiments of ownership, there cannot be the extreme inaccessibility of the rasa. So the gopis have naturally, from eternity, the innate sentiment of being others' wedded wives. This is in Goloka. They think they have husbands, but there are no husbands. But by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, in order to add excitement to the whole thing, by helping to create the extreme inaccessibility of the rasa, Yoga Maya has arranged that all these gopis have this innate sentiment of being others' wedded wives. Krishna too, in response to that sentiment, by assuming the reciprocal sentiment of paramorship, performs the rasa and the other amorous pastimes with the aid of the flute. Again, the flute is there. His favorite, Shir Ami, his dear friend. Goloka is the transcendental seat of eternally self-realized rasa beyond limited conception. Hence in Goloka, there is realization of the sentimental assumption of the rasa of paramorship. They just think like that, sentimentally. Or they just think like that. And in this way, the rasa reaches extreme heights, which otherwise would not be possibility if the sentiment of ownership was there. Some of you may be married, and you may know that before you're married it seems a lot more exciting, but after you got married it seems less exciting. Because the sentiment of ownership is there. The husband has to serve the family. The wife has to serve. It's not a matter of whether they want to or not. But when that is not there, and it's simply on the basis of whether they actually want to or not, then it's much more fun. So that is the idea here. This idea in paramorship. There is no paramorship, but it just looks like there is. In the material world, it looks like there is because there are husbands. In the spiritual world, it looks like there is because they think there are husbands. But in both cases, there are not really husbands, except for that third group. But then as they become perfect, then the husbands, the whole relationship, everything, kind of falls away. So we'll continue discussing this tomorrow a bit further. Any comments or questions? Okay. Oh, the second case. No, there may be husbands. There may be. But there's no relationship. It's just an illusion. Yeah. Okay. We're mentioning in regard to these 64 expertises, how Radharani has them. It's not just that she can dance nicely, or sing nicely, or talk cleverly, or cook nicely, but she can do these things in the most fantastic ways we can't imagine at all. We can't begin to imagine. And one specific feature or manifestation of that is that when she cooks for Krishna, she never cooks the same thing twice. And she's been cooking for Krishna every day since there was no beginning, actually. Not just, you know, so many years or millions or billions of years. There's been no beginning, but she's never cooked the same thing twice. So just imagine that. for we can't imagine that. But that just gives an idea of her expertise in all these things. You can apply the same principle to all these things. The way she can talk with Krishna. You know, her ability to talk in captivating ways. Her ability to dress herself in captivating ways. And to do all these 64 things in captivating ways is actually unlimited. And as a result, Krishna, who is definitely unlimited, he is kept in a state of constant enthrallment, just totally, totally overwhelmed by these things always. Because they are the complete manifestation of the pleasure potency, which is also unlimited. So there is unlimited capacity within the pleasure potency to please Krishna. And Srimati Radharani, being the pleasure potency in person, she has these unlimited capabilities to please Krishna in all these different ways. And Krishna himself has the same expertises. And he can also fascinate Radharani. So the exchanges that go on, this is called rasa. And this is the topmost rasa. All the gopis. Sorry? Oh, I see. Well, from what I've heard, I mean, I don't know where the story comes from, actually, specifically. It's not in the Krishna book, but it's a popular story that Krishna married all the gopis at that time. Although Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says some of the gopis are never married. But basically, yeah, he married all the gopis in that way. Their desire to have him as their husband was fulfilled. But then later, all the different cowherd boys came back. And so then, at least with those who were actually married, then, you know, this concept of paramourship comes up. Because then when Krishna was no longer the husband, then the husbands were no longer very, you know, it was very exciting when they were married to Krishna. But when they were just married to the ordinary, I mean, at least in case of some of them like Abhimanyu, or there's the one called Govardhan Mala who's married to Chandravali, then they didn't find it so exciting. Just like the cows, the calves, or the cows, when, because Krishna became the calves, but when the real calves were returned, then the cows were no longer so interested in their calves, and they would only go with Krishna. So when the cow, I mean, according to that story, when the different cowherd boys and cowherd personalities were returned after that pastime and became the husbands of the various gopis, because in so many cases they weren't such stimulating people, then the gopis sort of lost their interest in their husbands. But because they were attracted to Krishna and they'd associated with Krishna as their husbands, so their attraction for Krishna remained, and that manifested in the form then of these conjugal pastimes with Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.